Welcome to a podcast on fire on Project S and First Strike. And after a successful outing alongside Jackie Chan in Police Story 3, Supercop, Stanley Tong and Michelle Yeoh teamed up for a spin-off movie involving her character and Jackie Chan in drag for a minute. We'll therefore talk of how Project S fares, and in the second half, the Police Story series continues its global and international feel, as again Stanley Tong and Jackie Chan brings us First Strike. And my name is Kennedy, and with me for the All Things Stanley Tong podcast this week is Tom KW, or Tong KW, if you
Hello, giving you that double tong action. Whoops, Ken knows about that.
Starting out lewd, as always.
Shit. Sorry, man. I really tried to be, you know, not unlewd, but I couldn't do it, man.
I set you up with this, like, these passes, and you run straight for the goal.
Really well. That was a complete touchdown on that one there, man.
There it is. Tom KW is a writer over at VCinemaShow.com. We might not have mentioned that. We usually mention it last, but I'll mention it first this time. And got any plans, or the summer is all booked for outside stuff?
No plans at the moment, man. Just depends on what I've seen and whether, you know, it's someone's already got a review in first. So, you know, I just play it by ear, man. I'm casual with my... you know, with my movie watching in terms of kind of what I see and what I do. I'm not too intent on seeing, you know, a specific genre or a specific decade throughout the year. So I kind of, you know, mix and match. And when the time comes and I see, a newer film that's, you know, people want to hear about it, but I see a newer film that I feel like, you know, deserves a mention, or not. I just want to fume about it. I'll give it a whiz on there.
Did you find any inspiration writing about the SPL2 after having watched it?
I did a bit. VCinema had already got a review on there. I think possibly from John Bearer, I think so. He probably did it a lot better than I would do it, but a thousand times better than I would do it. So let him have that one. But SPR2. there's a lot to say about it. I don't know whether some good, some bad. So it's an interesting one.
It's a movie that happened that you didn't necessarily...
It's a movie that happened.
Yeah. That you didn't necessarily start worshipping from viewing one. It's not SPL2 this time. We're about up to four. Like, these are series we're talking of this episode. Like, Project S is sort of like 3.5, I guess. Part of a series, half manner. And First Strike is the fourth in the Police Story series. What have we had since then? Two, right? New Police Story and...
Police Story. I think this new one is just called Police Story, isn't it?
And then lockdown in other areas of the world.
Ooh, interesting. Lockdown. Mm, yeah. Nice.
Like a US retitle, I believe, or international. But we'll see if there's anything else. We could always cover it. Lockdown, we've done New Police Story. We're not doing it again.
Let's do it again.
I feel the same way. I've not grown fond of tedious melodrama and bad drunken acting.
Ooh, cutting it where it hurts.
I stick to my views. I know you like
Sticks
it.
To
I,
his
I know,
guns, this man.
I know it's a special movie for you, and I love that memory because it was the first Jackie Chan movie on the big screen for you, New Police Story. And that's wonderful. So I'm not gonna take away that memory from you. I just. God damn it, Jackie Chan, you have a drunken master, what's this? So there it is. Let's get on with it. There's some short contact information before we do Project S and First Strike. So this is Podcast on Fire at the Podcast on Fire Network. We are located on podcastonfire.com. This show covers Hong Kong cinema from a variety of decades, even what we deem newer movies are 50 years old movies by now. So we're bringing in newer movies, post-millennium movies. So it's a wide variety of movies for us to cover. That's why this series can go on for quite a long time. So 70s, 80s, 90s, post-millennium, and even occasionally 2015 and 16 movies.
We're not picky.
It all has a place. We did Dragon Blade on the other show, The Dragon Dynasty. The guys talked of Dragon Blade. Anyway, you have other shows on a variety of different cinema, Japanese, Korean, Ninja, Sleazy, and we also do bonus episodes over there on podcastonfire.com. If you have any questions or feedback about the Police Story series or Project S and what have you, podcastonfire@googlemail.com. If you follow the handy colorful buttons at the top of our page, you'll reach our Facebook page, and you can also therefore join our Facebook group for show update and chat, and our Twitter account, as well as our iTunes feed. If you subscribe to podcasts, you can use that link to subscribe to us, leave a star rating, and even leave a comment. And finally, you can stream us on Stitcher Radio, either via their web presence or the applications available on the Apple App Store and Google Play. And I write about the variety of Hong Kong Taiwanese movies, mainly, over at SoGoodReviews.com. Anything from Category 3, Taiwanese, Ninja, Charlie Cho, and rinse and repeat, so to say. And my video hub is SleazyKVideo.com, and my Twitter handle is at SoGoodReviews. So that's us for now. Let's take a short promo break. We're going to play a promo from one of our friends in the podcasting community, and after that, we'll be back to discuss Project S.
Smithy, you've got to come back with me.
Where?
Back to the future.
Wait a minute. What are you doing, Trev?
I need fuel. Go ahead, quick, get in the car.
Oh, no. I just got a new copy of The Evil Dead, and I'm watching that tonight.
We'll bring it along. It concerns that too.
Wait. What happens to us in the future?
No. Both you and your Evil Dead collection turn out fine. As your kid, Smith, something's got to be done about our kids. They team up and do their own movie podcast. They hate Evil Dead and Back to the Future. We'll have to show them how a funny and informative podcast is really done.
Well, Trev, you better back up. We don't have enough road to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Listen to Mass Movie Side UK. Available every Sunday by iTunes, Stitcher, and all good podcast outlets. Your ticket is now dry.
And welcome back, and first review of this episode is Project S from 1992, also known as Once a Cop and like Super Cop 2, because they tried to further the Michelle Yeoh connection on the US market. But the original title is Project S, and plot from the Far East Films review of the film. Short and sweet, Michelle Yeoh returns to the role of Inspector Hua from her character from Police Story 3, this time on the trail of a gang of robbers in Hong Kong. The clues seem to indicate that the robbers are former soldiers, but as the evidence mounts, the ringleader proves to be someone very close to her.
Who could it be?
It's quite evident early in the film who it is, but let me hear your quick opinion, first of all, of Project S.
My quick opinion, Project S, underappreciated Police Story spin-off. From, there you go, the main scoop from Tom.
Right on. It's cool. We have different opinions for now. For me, it's mediocre with a capital M. As I always say, when we reach these points, this is not about arguing that my opinion should be correct and your opinion should be correct. Be quiet. your opinion should be correct. Like, we're here to share our opinions, and all opinions are welcome, right? So let me just state that for now. But you often say that certain directors transition, you know, from when they transition from small to big, that can be problematic. But I think I found a problem here. I don't think Stanley Tong, the director, is shown here as being capable of making a small Hong Kong film. He needs to get out there. He needs to open up his scope and go places, you know, Africa and Australia and Russia. And it's a shame because of the impact Michelle Yeoh and her character made in Supercop that, for me, that she or no one else makes an impact here. I think it's quite mediocre. You know, it's not automatic doom necessarily when you see that Stanley Tong's film is quite limited in scope. It's a lower budgeted film. But it feels more quickly thrown together, but you can still achieve Hong Kong cinema, you know, rough and gritty action, Hong Kong tinted cinema, Hong Kong action tinted cinema, you know, can get action gold working in a smaller scope, even if you're not hopping around the globe, you know, going places.
Have you seen his because I mean, obviously, you got into a phase where he did these bigger international films. Have you seen his kind of smaller Hong Kong stuff? Because he directed a couple of the Angel films, didn't he?
Unofficially, I think he might have been on them, because sometimes Teresa Wu is credited as director, sometimes Ivan Lai and Tony Leung Siu Hong. So I think in reality, I mean, his debut was Stone Age Warriors, and I think they went either to Africa or brought in exotic animals for that sort of desert adventure.
I suppose that's his voice starting, really, as a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. One could argue, yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen anything post China Strike Force. I never saw The Myth, and I think The Myth is the last film he's directed. And I never saw Mr. Magoo either, so who knows
how that is. No, but I do want to. I keep saying to myself, I do want to see it at some point.
But yeah, I mean, it's not automatic doom, as I said, but any general thoughts on that, Stanley Tong's big style versus small style here, if you will? I mean, why is it underappreciated? Like, why does it work for you? Let's just ask basically.
Yeah, well, personally, I think it's maybe a different take on... I mean, it's almost like he's getting out of Hong Kong. You're spreading your wings a bit. You're getting a bit of a bigger budget. And I think if you can do that well, you know, you can kind of take this kind of Hong Kong style, this Hong Kong action with Jackie and with Michelle in this film, and take it to, you know, a different area. I suppose with this one, it's not as obviously big and international as Police Story 3 or Police Story 4. Still, you got your kind of Hong Kong setting, but...
Sure. It feels like a very recognizable Hong Kong movie. That's why I didn't feel like it was doomed from the get-go. Like, bring us something. But I sort of, action was lacking for me, and dramatic impact was too... we'll get to that, but...
I think he generally does it well. He does the kind of international... Because same with China Strike Force, it's got that same... Yeah, it's got that same... But, I mean, with that, it's got that same kind of international, you know... bigger budget, kind of more, you know, kind of worldly approach to the filmmaking, which I like. I like it a lot. I mean, it can go either way. You know, you have films that Jackie's done himself, which have been more international, that he's either directed himself or starred in, that haven't been as successful because maybe it's reliant too much on its settings and its kind of international flavor. Whereas I think, you know, Stanley, he directs on his laurels of bringing really good A-game to the action and the characters and story. And I think the international setting is just kind of a bonus a lot of the time, and more of a creative, you know, playground for him to, you know, play with his toys in, which I really dig.
And hurt people. Because a lot of people apparently, well, a lot, not a lot, but there are injuries even on a non-Jackie Chan movie, like Aaron Kwok got fairly seriously injured on China Strike Force and stuff like that. So,
well, Stanley's a stuntman himself, isn't he? So I think he does. I think he went on record saying he does a lot of the stunts before. He won't make an actor or an actress do a stunt without himself doing it. So I think he tests a lot of them out beforehand, or, you know, wouldn't have put anybody in serious danger, because he knows himself kind of how dangerous, you know, little things can be when you're a stuntman. So I think he brings that shorthand in his stuntman background to the table as well.
For sure. But it starts quickly. You got a hostage situation, and Michelle Yeoh is going in there undercover as a doctor. And there are some cool beats here, because you see Yuron Guang, who co-stars in the movie, and when he spots her, he realizes that they've sent in her undercover, and that there's a danger to be had here. And it's kind of badass the way she uses the defibrillator pads to knock down bad guys. And there's certainly sufficient hand-to-hand and kicking action, you know, close quarters as choreographed. But I felt the stunts were better than the fighting, to be honest, because there is some class, like falling through tables, being hit by vases and stuff like that. But, you know, as an opening showcase, fighting showcase, I was sort of like a bit neutral to the fighting, but more impressed by the stunts. And rather perplexed why Yukari Oshima only gets like a cameo here.
Second, isn't it? Yeah, she gets like, it feels like a role you kind of should be somebody
he's
else.
He's gonna be
you
in
know,
it. Awesome. Like no, no, she's not. No, she's not.
Yeah, it kind of feels like it should be kind of maybe someone else, like a kind of a smaller character actor appearing in the role rather than her. It's like, okay, she's sticking around then or not? But she doesn't know. She's never seen him again.
I'm off to do another Moon Lee movie called Angel or something. See you guys. Which was probably true. Like I'm all busy with Moon Lee and other directors. Like I've happened to be having lunch right here. So
yeah.
And then the camera came up to me. Okay, I guess I'll participate. But what's your thought on the opening? You know, getting into it quickly. Like there's no setup. Like boom.
No setup. It's straight in. I think it you kind of go with that action setup, and then the characters' kind of motivations and their relationships comes after that. But I think it's just pacing, man. I think the whole film, but especially those first 45 minutes or so in particular, just absolutely fly by. And the action just comes thick and fast, and it's solid. It's good. It's a really good way of starting the film. But I think the whole film's like that, man.
Yeah, the pace I never had a problem with, considering it's damn long, actually. The version I watched is 103 minutes, which I thought I was going to be annoyed at and by. But there's nothing wrong with the pace, surprisingly enough. And obviously he sets up, dramatic conflict, because Michelle Yeoh and Yuron Gwang, it seems chased, but it's clearly that they're clearly, you know, romantically involved or have feelings for each other. But as dubbed, because I watched the dubbed version, presumably the export one, because this is not a dub with Michelle Yeoh's voice, right? And as dubbed,
English dubbed,
yes,
okay.
And it's actually a sync sound movie originally, but I only had an English dub at my disposal. And as dubbed, at least. And here's the problem, where if the action would have like played well to me, like this drama would have been like fine, functional string. They're not making, you know, a classy drama here, but they were seemingly trying. And as handled in the dub, like Yuron Gwang's motivation is just really, really annoyed me. It's so on the nose. It's not like I want to be a better person and get a little bit of money. No, I want to be rich. I want money. Money, money, money. That will make me happy. I'll leave you now. And I thought, come on. I could be a little bit more subtle about these things. But I'm only annoyed at it now because I didn't think the action sort of... it wasn't like a springboard for action, right? It all sort of is quite timid and mild to me. But, it's functional dramatic string, I suppose. You know, her running after him while he's on the train and all of that, and you know, you got a dramatic like emotional divide there, and okay, like dazzle in other areas then, but I didn't feel that.
I know what you mean with the motivation, but I kind of saw it as him being a soldier, and kind of seeing all this shit and fighting for, you know, fighting for nothing, fighting for, you know, zero money and, you know, riches. And I think it's kind of like it maybe changed him, and he just wants money, he kind of wants to get rich. So I think it was motivation enough for his character and his relationship with Michelle Yeoh's character and to hang the action on. And that's how I saw it. For me, it was effective in that way.
And maybe that negates another note I have about the fact that he was a soldier, because it seems like he's a fantastic criminal. Right, like from frame
he's
one,
good at
you know
being
what I mean?
A criminal, yeah, kind of quite instantly.
But you know, I'm kind of nitpicking there. It's just that because I didn't feel the action, and they were clearly sort of meaning a little bit of the drama here. You know, there are some emotions later on in the movie, so it's not like they were making parody of drama. They were trying to set up something somewhat serious here. They both do okay together as actors, and always liked her, always liked him.
He's a handsome fuck, you is. I mean, it's just, it's you know, when I grow up, I want to be like you.
Like me?
You, not you. No. Not you. You and you, yeah.
Don't aspire to me.
You and you, yeah. I wish I was a little bit taller. I wish I was a baller.
He's been sort of dragged along, but in a positive way, onto Jackie's international career. I think he was in the one of the Shanghai movies, and he popped up in New Police Story and things like that, so he's always been a favorite of Jackie, and certainly in and around Stanley Tong's company here. So not a bad actor when called upon to act. My question was, did you watch the original language version of this?
I did, yeah, the original language. So you've got the Mandarin mostly performed by you, and then he talks. When he talks in Cantonese, I think he's dubbed.
Yeah, it seems like he never. He's even dubbed a new police story, so I just think that he was never comfortable with Cantonese in sync sound for acting. But yes, for even a small Hong Kong movie, Stanley Tong is going with the professionalism that he established for Police Story 3 by having this be in sync sound, which I've seen the subtitled version a couple of years ago, so I know I've. That's why that memory come from. But. It attempts not just like fight action all throughout, you know, it attempts some gunplay. I know I sound snarky, I don't mean to. Like, it's not Angry Ken, but I didn't think the gunplay was very, you know, staged in an exciting manner or anything. They don't go for acrobatic, they go for realism, sure.
Close combat, kind of like locked in certain places, kind of not busy places, but if you mean busy structurally, kind of climbing around things, climbing on top of things.
Mm-hmm.
I know what you mean. It's not like a massive playground to play in. It's more kind of, you know, closed, which I liked. It's
competent, all right. But to me, it's sort of like the unfortunate thing with the movie that I wanted to like back then and still is that it's sort of drowning the action output. I can't find any distinct nature here where it sort of sticks in my memory, other than I guess like my biggest joy in the movie, by the way, was seeing Bill Tong involved in gunplay. Uncle Bill doesn't sit behind a fucking desk throughout this movie. Like, he gets to go out there on the street and shoot.
Yeah, so we've got him. Just first watching when he popped up, I was like, yes, Bill has landed.
But that's all good. Emil Chow gets a larger role than usual. He appears every now and again as in bit parts in Jackie's movies. He's in
Robo Emil.
Yeah. I don't remember that screen that you sent on to the group from my version of the film, but I might have just missed it. But you know, you see Emil in like a bit parts in Mr. Nice Guy as this sort of hot dog vendor or ice cream vendor, and obviously a good actor in Purple Storm, so he can do serious as well. And here he plays by the books cop and all of that, and he's supposed to be, you know, the dull one that like no, by the book, calling reinforcements, we can't go in. I kind of feel that Emil Chow is not ready for this spotlight. You know, it's a bit awkward, at least as dubbed.
But he's mostly a singer, isn't he? I don't think he's only been in a handful. I mean, known in Hong Kong's done a handful. He's doing
50.
Minimum 50. But he's not done like a whole lot, has he? I think he's more like known for being a singer.
Yeah, some bigger roles here and there. He did a romantic drama with Christy Chung that I remember was set in Canada. That's why it sort of lingered on in my memory. I don't remember what it was called, Faithfully or something. I don't know. But so him and Christy Chung, like a nice gig, man.
Faithfully Yours.
I think that's it. I think that's it.
That's a pretty nice gig. Yeah.
So, and then they went to Canada and all of that. So I just thought, like, knowing and sort of liking Emil Chow in later roles at Purple Storm, I thought it was quite dull, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen that.
Purple Storm?
It was one that HKL put out, and I think I never got around to it.
One of their earlier discs. Good movie. Teddy Chen directed.
Okay.
Possibly the one that got him with a gig on Accidental Spy, based on the chops displayed on Purple Storm.
Yeah, of course. That makes sense.
So it doesn't go into huge comedic detours or anything, but when it doesn't seem to sort of play it super broad or anything, because at one point Michelle Yeoh catches Emil Chow reading a Playboy stuffed in another magazine. Ha ha ha. They don't create a fuss about that. Like, oh my God, it's not my hubble, hubble, hubble.
Yeah, it's quite tame. It doesn't really kind of get into slapstick territory. It's always quite tame, the comedy. I think he's all right in it. I don't think he's not like, you know, amazing in it. But I think he's, for the role, they needed someone obviously that kind of maybe was more of an everyman compared to you, not you, Ken, Yuron Kwang. They needed more kind of an everyman compared to him is what I'm thinking in terms of the casting. They probably didn't want to kind of a head to head. Because it's not really what the film's about, is it? It's more about kind of Michelle and Yuron Kwang's relationship.
So speaking of that, what's your favorite action sequence, if not the one where Yuron Kwang spots that Michelle Yeoh is actually in the same building they are?
I think that's the one, yeah. I think that's the one. You saying that, yeah. I think that's good because, you get the great, get great gunplay, you get a bit hand-to-hand, and then you get those couple of nice, very nice stunts at the end with the bus and the car. So I think that's good. I think that's really the peak of the film there in terms of the action. I said, like, first 45 minutes or so, it just builds and builds, and then, yeah, a bit more narrative. I don't think it ever slows down, but I think that's probably the peak in terms of action for me.
He does tension well here, Stanley Tong, because when... You know, he's about to, you know, he sort of acts like the sniper, Yuren Gwang. So, and he's about to shoot whoever comes into his sights, and he sees Michelle Yeoh, and probably recognizes her via the clothes, because he gave those clothes to her. That white coat and the hat and stuff like that. And there is some, like, brutality here that it's not too bad. Like, there's brutal executions, and but it's not a Ringo Lam Kirk Wong spike that I sort of go, you know, get a movie boner from or anything. But it's okay. It's okay. And Yuren Gwang is looking very sharp, and he moves with a grace. And that movement pattern is something that always elevates action scenes sometimes. Like, he looks comfortable with a gun. And like, it's not this kung fu guy that they place the gun into his hands and it sort of looks awkward. No, he moves in such a swift manner. Character is a soldier, it makes sense, but he there's nothing really about that performance I dislike. It's just sort of the scripting that I told you of that I do.
I think he's really great in it. And I think I've just lost my train of thought there with what I was saying. Which is always a good laugh. Oh, yeah.
Dreamy, yes.
It's just a dreamboat sheen lost in his eyes. No, what I was going to say was, I think having that dramatic element to that particular action scene, I think maybe really makes it stand out, because, yeah, there's a bit of tension there, because it's not just straight action. It's like things are happening narratively while the action plays out, and you kind of go, oh, what's going to happen here? But, I, you know, that whole thread of him and you kind of playing, he kind of plays off, you know, Michelle's character in terms of he tricks her and kind of fools her, and so I think it's really good. He plays it really, really well. Like, it's never over the top cartoonish bad guy. He's a very manipulative character, but he's always like cool, calm, collected when he's going to be in. He has a few outbursts, but when it comes to the plotting and the planning of obviously the final heist, it's really cool, calm, and collective, and I like that.
It might sound daft, but I thought, you know, watching this and fairly recently China Strike Force for this show, watching Stanley Tong's movie, that movie with Coolio and Mark Dacascos and Aaron Kwok and what have you, I mean, it's designed for fun, but I thought there was stretches in that where it clearly the comfortable filmmaking persona show there. There are some interesting dramatic scenes, especially with Paul Chun, like when characters are just talking and it's being very professional. So I know that voice is in him, that he's not just this action guy who then leaves the directing to the second AD or whatever. Like, he knows to craft like a decent interest in between fun, which China Strike Force ultimately is. I mean, it's a flawed movie because Coolio is in it and he's totally obnoxious, but it's a damn fun movie. And some of the action, sorry for going on a tangent here, but I don't know if you remember, some of the action in China Strike Force looks as reckless as some of what we've seen in the 80s and 90s. As a guy who jumps from a van right into one of those storage containers that comes on boats and what have you. And I watched that over and over again. I think they just asked some poor guy to do that, because it's not a CG shot. It's not like on wires and it's thrown into a mattress or anything. Like, he jumps from a speeding car on into the side of a container. Okay, hopefully you didn't break your face.
Hopefully he's not dead. No, fingers crossed.
So there is some cool stuff in there. So he knows decent professionalism, but here tension doesn't get to me either. There's a apartment invasion by Dick Wei's character where he holds Athena Chu, you know, hostage and all of that. And again, as dubbed anyway in English, it didn't feel like as dangerous as I sort of wanted it as a viewer to feel, because Dick Wei is dangerous as fuck. So you get
Dick Wei's his face when he's climbing on the roof and he's perving on Emma Chow's sister in the shower. It always makes me laugh. It's quite subtle. It's not like, you know, overplayed, but he just kind of like flicks his eyebrows a little bit, which I thought was quite funny. Dick, the shower pervert.
One of my favorite scenes actually does achieve good tension. There's a scene where Yuren Gwang is communicating with a fellow soldier that is being watched by the police in at the hospital, and he communicates with him with Morse code, because he, you know, as you said, he, I think it's Morse code anyway, he taps on his arm and that's their communication or whatever, and he sort of manipulated his way into, you know, Michelle Yeoh's circle of friends now, that, oh, this is my friend and all of that. So, and I thought that was cool, because Yuron Gwang sort of continues to shine here, you know, doing this in the open and very confidently as a character, and therefore, you know, planning an escape and all of that. So you know, props to that little bit of cinema right there. But Tom, let's talk Jackie Chan and Eric-san.
I love that cameo. It's yeah, I do. I'm guessing you don't. But
no, I don't. Can you say out of place?
It is out of place because there's no narrative ties to what's actually going on. It's not like Michelle sees it happening or.
Oh,
or
hi, Jackie.
Like that.
Hi, Chanko Koi. Hello.
Jackie? How are you? You know, it doesn't. It's just kind of like a random scene in the middle, but I do really like it. I mean,
tell the kids what it is.
In its actual context, we're talking contextually here, so we're getting quite fruity on the Podcast on Fire Network. Yeah, basically, Jackie, Eric Tsang is a thief who's kind of like, he's kind of like going into the place to check out what the story is with it, going to give the word to his boys in the car about whether they can do the place in or not. Jackie's a cop in there, and for some reason they're dressed exactly the same as women. Fake boobies and all.
Curly hair.
Bigs.
Curly wigs.
Red dresses. And there's just a little bit of interplay between them. They ended up losing, like, a boob each. I think Eric went with water balloons. Jackie went with oranges. I don't know whether what the pluses or negatives are of using those as fake breasts. I don't know. I'm guessing strictly texture laws are applied. Yeah, it ends up like having a little bit of a chase. You know, they both discover who the other one is, and there's kind of a bit of a chase scene between them, which is just mostly just, it's just playful laugh. Jackie gets a nice little stunt, kind of jumping onto a car or a van, which is pretty cool. But it's, I mean, it lasts what, like 2 minutes, 2-3 minutes? It's not.
Yeah, if that. I mean, there's a lot of like, I mean, I can laugh about it now, but you know, when they stuff the squeaky toy in inside the bra instead of the breast, and it goes like beep 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 beep, oh, squeak 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 squeak, ha ha ha.
He speaks to Bill Tong on the phone as well, and he says, oh, I'm not going to America again or something. I thought that was a shy little dig, maybe, or a little kind of just reference to Jackie. I think that was quite good.
It is what it is. I mean, it's enjoyable for, I know why it's there, it's very audience friendly, but it breaks moods like you read about, because the movie has not like hinted at we're being silly as well.
Well, there's no kind of Hong Kong mood shift in this film at all. It's all very played out. I mean, it goes from scene to scene. It never gives up. The story's tight. It doesn't waste time in any superfluous scenes. And I think that's why, that's why I think, Kenneth, I'm going to say spiritually, it's a very good sequel to Super Cop, even if it doesn't reach the heights of that film. You know, it's almost like a cousin, you know, rather than a son or a brother. It feels like a cousin to that film.
Right on. Well, which is very fair. And this cameo, I mean, it allows for shameless promoters to put Jackie on the posters as well, which they even did in Asia, man, not just in America, where it's like...
He's not on the DVD in a black shirt, though, funnily enough.
And then, and one of the posters, at least in Asia, they do have Jackie in drag, so people know what to expect. So they're like, why is he looking? Oh, my God. And he was there. He was available. Eric Tsang was available. It seems like a quick thing to shoot, and the audience has probably had fun, and I'm not going to stand in the way of that. But out of place, like you read about. it's sort of like a... Let's have an intermission here and show a little short film for you all.
Yeah, film's so long that we have to have this intermission in the middle, you know.
Like, screw Hateful Eight types of intermissions, right? Have a short film, a little cartoon in between.
Oh, Mars is in that little cameo as well.
He appears. That's true.
Yeah. It's
good. So yeah, but you know, as I said, I would have taken a so-so narrative as and then good action, because but again, there's no spike here, as I said, a more than decent sense of professionalism, you know, all around. But it's still
that's the most you can ask for a film sometimes.
Well, it's more than you can, like, more than you see in most Hong Kong movies, a decent sense of professionalism. It all sort of just 10-day shoots and 2-day post-production, and out in the cinema you go sometimes. But it's crafted. It's a crafted film. But still, it sort of drowns in the action output for me. But, you know, the vault robbery that ends the movie and the violence that is in there, because it turns a bit gory, even gory violence here. It's all competent, and I like that, you know, the characters, Stanley Tong is not afraid to show death here. You know, it's not action fun with kicks to the face. No, people get killed quite viciously in one case, with the whole vault door closing thing that I won't spoil. You know,
yeah. Michelle gets a little chance to shine, you know, in terms of gets a little one-on-one with this massive dude, and
that's
and
my favorite scene in the movie, man.
It's good. It's really
those
good.
Guys are big, or she is. She is hobbit sized.
Somewhere in the middle, I think. Yeah.
So when she's lifted up, she looks like at least 10 times smaller. You know, but it's actually quite a fun. They're like hired soldiers for the character that someone called Alain Genier. Genier. He speaks English in the movie. Who knows if he's French or Canadian or whatever. So it has a little bit of an international flavor. But I thought those scenes were well done, because she has to overcome like 2 giant obstacles. You know, she fights 2 of them, I believe. And it's the best action scene for her, I think. And not fun that took you out of the movie, though. It was neatly part of the serious robbery situation going on here.
Agree. Yeah, because it was almost kind of, you get that and then you get the kind of emotional, you know, dramatic climax as well, which is good. It's good. It's very kind of natural. Logical end into the film.
It was decently pulled off. I agree in terms of the dramatic sense there. So I wasn't like totally tuned out or angry or anything. But you know, why in the 90s couldn't they find a decent way to showcase Fan Xiu Wong, who's in this movie?
I know.
As well?
You think it's like he struggled, but it took him so long to become. Kind of, it's still like a leading man. He's always kind of been on the sideline, but it just took him a lot of working really hard in these little films, and it's a shame, really, because...
Even fighting Dick Way, I thought that fight scene was meh.
I thought it was pretty good. I do like it. I just thought they couldn't...
I think Dick Way got defeated way too easily. I think he kicks his, like, face or his leg into glass, and he goes, like, ow, ow, ow. Like, Dick Way wouldn't go, ow, 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 by that little cut, you know?
Because I think they just, they struggled really, kind of, too. Because some films he's seen as really young, and he's as a kid, and then there's other films like Ricky O where he's kind of an adult, and they kind of didn't quite know where to put him. He was kind of in that awkward phase between, you know, young man and an older man, and he was underused, and I don't think they quite knew how to use him, and maybe he struggled himself with his own on-screen persona. But I love seeing him when he pops up, and it's a shame really that he never really got that chance to shine as a lead.
I remember very little from Stone Age Warriors, but Stanley Tong used him for a fairly large role in that one. And I mean, I liked the movie. It was good action fun in that exotic setting. So he must have, like, used him action-wise to a degree in between, like having Nina Lee and Elaine Loi chased by scary, like, animals, like tigers and cougars and what have you. Took a while, but he's earned it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's getting there with it, and I think he's you know, hard working actor.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he deserves that kind of, you know, he deserves people to critical eye on him. Just he struggles with that kind of leading man role, and kind of how to, you know, in which way does he kind of show himself off in that way. It's weird. It's difficult.
And I've never like pursued bodyguards and assassins and things like that. Or rather, I'm thinking of Ip Man. Sorry, because I know he's in one of them at least, and looking awesome. I mean, he's grown into a comfortable leading man, and you know, as an adult now, pushing 40 or just turned 40 or whatever, looks you know, very striking.
He's in the first 2, yeah, and he's great in those. He really is. But I'm glad he's grown up as a leading man, much like kind of Andy Lau was saying. I think he's got better and he's improved as an actor because he feels a bit more, you know, kind of comfortable in his own skin. So
I have no other notes, so I'll let you have the floor. What else do you want to talk about?
I haven't got a lot to say, apart from the main bad guy in the film, who we were just talking about. About halfway through, he wears one of the loudest T-shirts I've ever seen in my life. And it literally made my eyes bleed for a second, and I felt very uncomfortable. But that's the only negative about the film.
He mostly wears suits and crap in the movie, right?
It's just that one instance, yeah, where he's chilling by a pool, and he's like, "Do you know what? I'm gonna break out the t-shirt, the puke t-shirt. It's gonna go down well with the ladies." So apart from that one scene, the rest great.
Your opinion is cool. Mine's cool. Your opinion is right. Mine is right. Your opinion is wrong, and mine is wrong. Like. That's where the way it is. You can't like define and decide on anyone, so that anyone is right or wrong.
Podcast fist pump, Skype fist pump, England, Sweden. It's beautiful.
What a Foley artist we have, ladies and gentlemen. Alrighty then. As for availability, it had both Laserdisc and DVD releases in Hong Kong, but without subtitles though. And while the Tai Seng import on VHS, that did contain subtitles, reportedly. They sort of were working off different sources. They weren't just taking exactly what was on the Hong Kong market. So if you had that, then that was a way to see it subtitled. And as for further DVDs, MIA in the UK, I think, ported their VHS transfer that was equipped with newly done subtitles to a DVD. And I had that, and I probably sold it back in the day when I was still trading and selling stuff. I can't be bothered to do that nowadays, but I did have it. And it probably featured a very good translation, obviously, in original sync sound and stuff like that. There is another UK release as Super Cop, still out there, containing the shortened version in English, and that can be picked up cheaply on the Amazon marketplace, as can that old MIA DVD if you want a used copy. That shortened version that I just mentioned was also on US DVD, and there are actually therefore two different dubs of the movie floating around. And as far as I understand it, you have a full export dub that I listen to and have, and then the shorter one featuring Michelle Yeoh dubbing herself in the wake of the success of SuperCop. This as SuperCop 2, I think. I'm gonna say maybe. It was presented as SuperCop 2, and they got the Michelle Yeoh in to dub herself, as they did for the US dub for SuperCop. So good consistency there, if you will. And obviously she speaks wonderful English, so that's probably gonna sound all right. And the cuts are probably, I'm guessing, maybe some comedy, maybe some violence, and in general just tightening the movie in some areas. So the edit might not play poorly or anything, but again, I haven't seen that, only the full versions. And also, for those not in need of subtitles, there is a French DVD featuring the uncut version of the movie that features the original sync sound, so you can get it on DVD in France as well. The edits, you know, by US and Miramax and what have you, they were necessarily not the problems with these movies, but as we discussed before, usually it was music design. Sometimes that was the problem when they tried to gangsta it up.
Yeah, there was bigger problems than just the dubbing.
Exactly. I mean, the dubbing was probably great because, well, it is great because in SuperCop we have Jackie and Michelle dubbing themselves, but then you have daft crap like, you know, the scene where they go to his Jackie Chan's village and he doesn't know where to go, and he's with Yun Hua at that point, and they turn on the radio and you hear like some 90s rap on the soundtrack. Come on, really? You know, it's not there in the original. It's just so out of place, man. And they even did that with Black Mask for its original cinema run in the US. They obviously dubbed it, but and then put a lot of, not a lot of maybe, but there's some, at least, you know, rap type of hip-hop music on there to make it that. And it's sort of like, come on, really? Is that really the go-to thing to lure in audiences? Like, it has beats. Hip hop beats. We're gonna see Jet Li and Lao Ching Wan play chess now in that movie. I like that movie, but I wouldn't want to see it in that version. It would just make an old man like me groan. Like, really? Come on, come on!
This racket.
Yeah, get off my lawn. Right. So there are some options out there, thankfully. So go get it if you're interested. And for now, we'll take a musical break this time and give you a short snippet of the updated Police Story theme as sung by Jackie Chan for First Strike. It's either updated, resung, so to say, or remixed a little bit. It seemed a bit more modern, the way my ears picked up on it. And if it was done today, it would have had like a dubstep added to it as well. The Police Story theme.
I will be supplying the music for the break as well. You will be hearing excerpts from my new album, Thoughts of a Curly Philosopher. And I hope you enjoy it. And if you could, you know, download my new track, that'd be great. Cheers.
And you'll be adding the beat as well.
I'll be adding the beat. I'll put my silencer back on there, yeah.
All right, though. Well, we'll discuss First Strike after this one, and we'll see if things turn more pleasant opinion-wise from me. Maybe our opinions are reversed. Who knows? We're gonna find out for First Strike. So sit tight, and we'll be back. And welcome back, and this is the review of First Strike from 1996, i.e. the fourth Police Story movie, but they didn't tag the English title with Police Story 4 or anything. But there is a 4 in the Chinese title, and certainly we have the Police Story theme at the end of the movie, so it really is part of that series. Even though it's Jackie Chan now, even in the Hong Kong version, rather than Chiang Kai-shek.
Yep.
So there it is. But anyway, plot from the Far East Films review of the film. In cooperation with Interpol, the Hong Kong police force decide to once again rely on their prize asset, Jackie Chan, i.e. Chiang Kai-shek in previous installments, to investigate the sale of off black market nuclear weapon components. The supposed mastermind behind the sale is a Chinese-American double agent, the character of Choi, played by Jackson Liu, who is negotiating with an unknown buyer. Jackie travels to the former Soviet Union and cooperates with local authorities in their pursuit of the dealer. However, a stakeout of the transaction ends in a costly shootout which sees the culprits escape and Jackie seriously ill. A bit cold, if you will. And after recovering from his injuries, the Chinese cop is sent to Australia, where his target is said to be hiding out. While there, Jackie meets his Choi's sister, played by Annie Wu. And he uses her family connections to discover more of him. Unfortunately, Jackie's probing uncovers corruption among his superiors, and their reaction is to frame him for murder. So, yep, I'll do my brief opinion first. I've said that Jackie has left like his more ultimate efforts, I'm meaning 5 out of 5 in my mind, in the past, such as Operation Condor. Love that movie. But this is still another entertaining collaboration between him and Stanley Tong, showing that the international flavor holds wonderful professionalism, and it's a fun playtime outside the confines of Hong Kong. Some weaknesses towards the end, the high concept end, but quite a lot of weaknesses actually, but we'll get to that. So what's your brief take on First Strike?
Fun but silly, almost like kind of, you know, James Bond spy film inspired chapter in the Police Story series.
Yep, and he even mentions that at one point, so I think they're very aware. Like, I feel like James Bond now.
Yeah, quite, you know, self-aware, I think, of what it's doing, which is good.
I think so, too. It's supposed to be entertainment here and not this international series. Like
The Spy Who Came In From the Cold, with exactly. Starring Jackie Chan.
So, the silliness has a place, I agree, and it's all good fun. It starts with serious briefing, and then they go with silly humor, and I think Jackie is so good with those small moments, because he's conducting the briefing in English, and he said that the Ukrainian target is called Natasha Rashushuv, and he bends down and looks closer at the paper, and I just love that stuff. I think it's not high art, right, but I just think Jackie's so good with those, like, because it is a difficult name. Like, in the subtitles, it's like, like, it is difficult. So, even when he exits the room, he says to himself, like, in English, Natasha, what a difficult name. So, you know, it gets me in a good mood right away, you know?
Yeah, especially with the sync sound. It helps, doesn't it? You know, it helps, the same before, more natural. You can get, I think, the comedic moments like that feel a bit more natural. It gives them kind of more of a chance to not improvise, but just a bit more free flowing, which is good. I like.
And even the English acting throughout, you know, whether from Jackie or other participants, I think it's actually quite good.
Yeah, I want to say that because I think the international cast in these late 90s Jackie Chan films get a bit of stick for being a bit B-movie, but I think with this one, there's no one particularly weak. You know, with the mix of languages and the performers, it all gels well. I mean, you know, everyone's, yeah, if a bit cartoonish at times, you know, fairly solid, and that's not a bad thing.
They seem to cast and write appropriate, like when he's with an American character, you got a solid American actor in there, and when he's with Russian characters, that barrier, slight barrier of accents and second language being English, that's played in a realistic manner from Jackie and via the presumably, you know, Russian performers. Let's just simplify it, because it didn't seem like English actors trying to speak Russian or anything. No, it seems like they cast locally.
Yeah, I mean, I think it helps having Jackson Lau as the main villain as well, and the plot being more about him rather than the main villain being. We'll see what happens in the plot, but you know what I mean? It's more kind of an emphasis on, like I was saying before, when we were talking about Project S, is more of an emphasis on this still kind of very HK-oriented story and action, and it's kind of like they're taking it somewhere else rather than them taking it, you know, maybe like Mr. Nice Guy does, take it to an international setting and that becomes a big part of the film, whereas this one it feels like the international setting is almost kind of a backing track to the main kind of Hong Kong story and action. So
it's a very good point, and actually quite a wonderful backing track. I think, again, you know, third time the charm or whatever, like Supercop, Rumble, and then this.
Yeah.
Although Rumble kept its, you know, New York and Canada for New York. But still, you know, still it was damn, those mountains in Brooklyn, you know. Or Bronx, rather. But I think Stanley Tong feels so comfortable crafting this international stage for a Jackie Chan production once again. It's not forced, which it could have been, you know, in the wrong hands. But it feels very competent the way they hop around the globe. And for the record, they shot in Ukraine, they shot in Russia, and they shot in Australia. With snow scenes being shot in an alpine resort in Australia called False Creek. So they weren't in Russia for the snow scenes. So those quite accomplished skiers that they used for that sequence.
Kenneth Rawson, geography nerd. You guys didn't know that.
I did need to look it up because I wanted to know. And I was quite surprised. Like, snow scenes, False Creek. Oh, okay, it's an alpine resort. Okay, I didn't know. I think those settings add, you know, quite wonderful flavor, but it doesn't, like, they don't shoot this tourist film or anything. It is, the plot dictates they go to these places, and that's where they set their plot and their variety of languages and Mandarin language scenes and and Cantonese scenes and English scenes, and it feels very natural, in my opinion.
I agree with that, man. Yeah, I think the best. I don't know the best, but I really like the first like 30 minutes of the film. I think it's superb because I really like the music as well. It adds to the espionage angle. You know, you got snowy Ukraine, or you know, the setting being in Ukraine. You know, it's kind of like a Cold War kind of vibe to it.
It's not glamorous as shot.
Not glamorous, no. As it does get. In later film, it's, you know, you get the best of both worlds. So I think that international setting really just, it's a natural extension of what Police Story 3 was doing. It gets a bit bogged down in international sightseeing later on in the film when we get to Australia. And I think the narrative gets a bit too convoluted for its own good. But, you know, I think that it comes correct in the end, I think.
Yeah, I agree. The stronger parts are, it is the beginning, because it moves and it's exciting too.
Yeah.
Like, it is, you know, a little bit of humorous touches here and there. Main one being that Jackie starts following this guy, and slowly but surely, you know, he isn't wearing much, and therefore he's freezing his ass off and all of that. But it feels like a genuine peril the longer this sequence runs.
It's dangerous, yeah.
Like that elevates the movie so much, and you have an effective term by Jackson Lau, or Liu, speaks wonderful English as well as, and I thought we were gonna have, like, wait a minute, a blonde-haired Chinese villain, but
yeah, in the beginning, yeah,
I was sort of fearful of that, really, but for some reason it's a wig, so we didn't get Chinese Julian Sands here, right? So
yeah, I still don't know why. I understand why, but I was the same thing. I was just like, who's going for a different look this time around? Old Jackson is there with the wig. It's a good look. But no, it turns out it is just a wig.
You remember Jackie saying sometimes that he prefers action in his movies and not violence, but he must have approved of Stanley Tong's decision to feature violence and death in this movie, because there is some.
Yeah.
That ambush at the cottage thing where, you know, these guys dressed in white come out of the snow and all of that. I mean, it's not like John Woo slow motion, like bloody scripts or anything, but it's not like cartoony violence that, fun, Jackie Chan movie. No, it's generally dark.
It's kind of a difference in terms of different types of action. And I think with Jackie's action, it's less maybe emphasis on gore. I think that's what he is kind of when he says about that. I think that's really what he means. It's kind of more the gore side to it. It's what I take from it. I don't know. I mean, from all what I kind of understand of what he's about, is that what he wants? Is that what he kind of aims for in terms of it? And I think with Stanley, he's in safe hands with that.
Because if he disliked it, he wouldn't made another movie with him, because Supercop was damn like dark at points, you know.
Because you know Jackie's like, I mean, you know, Jackie doesn't even stay for the whole film if he doesn't like the director or he doesn't get on with the director, you know, that's happened.
Or he takes over himself.
He takes over himself, you know, so that's how it ends up. But that's how I looked at kind of when he said about that. And they're two, you know, valid, amazing forms of action, you know, both, so...
Some minor just notes on the fact that the scooter chase that follows and the helicopter action that is involved in all of this too is captured very well. I thought this was very exciting. I mean, you obviously think of James Bond, one or two or maybe five James Bond movies have either opened...
You shot to five. So
yeah, or like, ten.
One, two, or 25.
Have opened this way or featured scenes, you know, at ski resorts and what have you. But I think they're doing their thing very well here, and they're probably using international crew to capture this... in a professional manner, but it looks great, I think, and it's exciting.
I think it's having that budget as well. You can have, you know, you've more cameramen, you have more facilities, you know, you've kind of got a good, you know, recipe for making it look particularly great and making it, you know, feel epic, I think, by having that bigger budget there. So it's one of the big positives of Stanley having that kind of scope and that budget to play with.
And I mean, it culminates in Jackie. He's, at some point, he had to take a bath in that icy water, right?
It's got to be done.
Because that looks like they were out there on the ice and found a, you know, an opening for him to take a bath in and then get out. So that, you know, obviously you can protect yourself from that, you know, take precautions. But still, this feels like a genuine natural environment that they decided to shoot that rather than a manufactured environment. Yeah. And that makes this sequence, again, get that status of feeling like he's in peril.
Earthy and realistic and feels kind of, you know, sharp. You can feel it because I think it's, you know, it's on set and it you just feel it, the way it's shot and the way it looks. It really helps.
What I wanted to ask you, this is not a movie filled with fight action, right?
No.
But considering what you see and approve of, and obviously subsequently, do you miss fight action being part of a police story movie, considering what we get here, the content here?
Again, I think it's more of a natural succession in the series, because I think if you think about it, the first one's heavy on action, the second one is, and then third you get more of an international, with the international setting comes a more kind of varied mix of action, and I think with this one it's kind of the same thing. It's that they go into different areas, and I don't mind that. I think with this one the action is definitely played for laughs a bit.
Yes.
More, it's like the Moonraker, if we're talking James Bond, of the police story series, you know. Yeah, it's like, it's just, it's different. I mean, it's no less enjoyable and amazing. It's just, it's just kind of different tonal quality to it, which is good.
If I disliked the entire movie, I probably would have argued against some of the fight scenes, like the latter one, because it takes place during morning. But it's still, it actually fits in an odd way, right? That the people are mourning. Let's get the ladder out and fight. We'll get to more details of that later. But I think it's all marvelous when they do decide to stage their one or two big scenes that isn't set in damn water. We'll get to the water.
It happens to me a lot, especially when I go to funerals. People start throwing ladders at each other, especially when the will comes out. That's when the real ladder throwing starts.
A proper British funeral.
Proper British funeral.
One thing I didn't particularly like, it seems like the filmmakers would have been smarter. I mean, I know I'm nitpicking, but and maybe I'm too politically correct for my own good, but I don't think there was a need to sexualize Annie Wu's intro scene where she starts to dress after having worked in the water with the dolphins and sea lions or what have you.
I'm not going to say I didn't like that, to be honest, but I can understand your point, yes.
It's just sort of like, what was the meaning of that, right? Yeah, why shoot it in a...
Yeah, it needed a bit of sax in that scene, for sure, but a sexy sax.
No wonder the international version cut that out and just cut to her meeting Jackie in the cafe and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I thought, like, Stanley Tong, you know better than that. Like, you're not Wong Jing, right?
No, Wong Jing
would do that.
Two very different filmmakers, for sure, yeah.
I agree. I don't miss the fight action as such, because it's an entertaining enough film, and it's got the set pieces that we do get, the action set pieces, the vehicular and the gunplay. It's all good. I like this development during this part of his career. More of the comedy comes towards the Australian half of the movie. It seems like one half is you know Europe and the rest is Australia, if you will, and there are some well timed things here, like when Jackie thinks he's chased by a shark when he's in that little tank, that little pool, and it turns out to be a sea lion instead.
Yeah.
which I think is a great payoff, and that sea lion looks adorable.
There's a lot of cute moments, and I think your tolerance for that kind of stuff will make or break your enjoyment of the film. I think it ties in. It's kind of like Jackie's character is a bit of a clown in this one. You know, they're shaking hands with a seal, like we said, and his hat, and
maybe it's a seal, right? Maybe not a sea lion. I don't know.
I think. What did you say?
Sea lion.
I think we can go whatever. Maybe just me being lazy. It's a when he shakes hands with the sir. and his hat and when he dresses up, he dresses up as a seal as well.
he's homeless at one point, so he's running around in whatever he can wear, I suppose.
your tolerance for that kind of stuff, and I think it depends if you're a Jackie Chan fan or not. I think, you know, I don't think this one, if you don't like Jackie Chan, I don't think this one will sell it to you, because you get a lot of that kind of stuff. But I think if you're a fan, it's great stuff.
I think it's well timed, like mixed with the serious plot. I enjoyed it, you know. It gets his close off again. It seems like it does that a lot of movies, and shows his butt to the audience, because, you know, Jackson Lau forces him to take his clothes off, and then he's stuck there at the car, and a lot of tourists see him. Oh my god! And I loved the bit with him singing as he stands there by the car, singing an English song, and his old lady walks past him and sings it with him, because she's sort of like, whoa, hello big boy, and starts singing it with him as well. I think those are silly moments, yes, for a very serious plot, but I have to admit I enjoyed it quite a bit. I laughed.
For sure. No, for sure. It's some really good moments in that. And, you know, everyone's game, you know, for it. It's not... Because I think it fits well with the kind of tone of the film. I think, yeah, it's kind of a bit more of a serious plot, but I think the tone is established fairly early on once we got to Australia, that it's a bit more lighthearted and the action's a bit for fun. It kind of, I think, you know what, it turns down the suspense and the danger and kind of turns up the kind of comedy and fun. So it's one of those. It's good in a different way, I think, towards the back end of the film.
Let's talk of one of the set pieces that probably everyone quotes from the movie, and that is, among other things, I save a ladder fight. It involves a lot more than ladders, mind you. But what do you want to say about this fight scenario here?
It's
good or bad?
It just shows the genius of Jackie Chan, this stunt team, and you also get to see the official Jackie Chan stunt team jumper in the film as well, which is great. But I think, didn't Jackie Chan win Best Action Scene of the Year at the MTV Awards or something for that year? I remember it being quoted as...
Yeah, that or Rumble, because MTV got, like, obviously was popular internationally, so, like, MTV probably nominated this, or maybe Rumble in the Bronx a year or two before. So yeah, the MTV Movie Awards were definitely aware of this, and they have those kind of categories.
Yeah, you get that kind of, you know, so you get that MTV approval with it, which obviously means it's amazing. It goes to show, kind of, in terms of fight scenes with this prop work and the kind of, in, you know, ingenious.
It never gets old, thankfully.
It'd be a collaboration between him, his stunt teams, you know, Stanley Tong. I'm sure that he had a few other ones, maybe like Chan Manching, Chan Wai To. I mean, there'll be quite a few people behind it, but it just goes to show. I mean, there's the creativity on set that they had with the action directors and with Jackie himself and the assistant action directors, he just had so much kind of ingenuity there.
Look at all the, we've seen so many scenes of him using, chairs and tables and pushing them onto bad guys and flipping them over, using the tables to fend off several people. And that choreography still doesn't get old. And this is just your playtime using the environment, albeit they're in the church, they're mourning and stuff. So it doesn't really make sense dramatically to have this kind of fight scene. But when it's this good, I don't really care. Because it's not, high drama necessarily. But when he grabs the big fold the ladder thing, that's that they managed to do something with that. Mm. With a very difficult prop, mind you, because it's obviously very very heavy to flip around. It's not a light spear or anything. It seems like it's full weight, and if not full weight, it certainly looks weighted to flip around. And it's all shot so wonderfully steady, wonderfully clean. The cinematography and the editing is so expert, and it's just screams outtakes, this type of scenes, and
straight away, and we get them. The importance of having clear, stable camera work in a fight scene is none more proved there, than anything. It just goes to show like how important it is to have your behind the scenes as good as what's going on, on the actual set, because if you don't have both, then you've lost the fight to kind of have a clear and potent fight scene that's going to make you feel something.
Because chaos doesn't equal chaotic camera, right?
No, not at all.
Like, the camera is there to follow the chaos in a clear manner. Even if the camera goes from left to right, Jackie and the cameraman, they don't lose sight of that this needs to be clear. We need to see this.
Chaos has to be planned, you know what I mean? In terms of when it comes to, film, chaos has to be planned, and I think a lot of filmmakers don't get that. It just goes to show with this, like, how important that is to have that formula there. And Jackie knows it at this point in his career. He knows that. He kind of knows how to do this. And I think it's a really good, it's a highlight, probably a highlight of his career.
Yeah, definitely.
You would argue, for sure.
And why he needs to make things complicated for himself, I'll never know, but he does it for us, because there's so many outtakes here where, when he jumps, into like the space between the ladder as it's unfolded, those small spaces, and that hurts when you mess up, because but it looks great, and he pinches, his fingers probably multiple times, like flipping that ladder around. But it pays off, man. It pays off that when he finally clears that, jumping into that space, in between the steps of the ladder, like sliding through that tiny, tiny space. When he does clear that, you just, even 20 years later, your jaw's on the floor, man. Like, oh my god, like even stuff in Russia when he slides under the grill, were they in a bank or something, and the grill between like the teller and the customer, when he slides under that looks like nothing, and he does it. Oh my god, like who does that, and who is allowed to spend time making sure that works, like 50 takes in, 100 takes in? Well, give him time and he's going to do it, and it's going to look great 20, 30, 40 years later, those moments.
Yep, true, man, you're completely true.
The problems with the film are sort of the following, right? And I gotta mention that the US edit of the film, I would like to see that again, because it's quite distinctly shorter, about 20 minutes shorter. And when I looked at comparisons, there's a lot of like 2 seconds here, 5 seconds cut here, 12 seconds here, 1 or 2 minutes there, a lot of tightening up of scenes throughout the movie. But where I think they went at it the hardest, and I'm thankful for it, is the underwater finale, because I think this runs too long and is damn boring. It wasn't fun in Thunderball. It's not fun now either.
Hey, it's great in Thunderball. It's just not good here.
I love Thunderball. That scene goes is slow, because being underwater automatically means things are slow.
Well, yeah, it depends on what you do with it, yeah. I don't agree with you on Thunderball, but I agree with you here, yeah. I think, I don't know, it's like, it's too gimmicky, it's a bit too gimmicky, it's a bit too overlong. It's fun for what it is, but it's enjoyable, but on another level, and I think after a bit it does start to weigh you down, because it lacks suspense, it lacks a climax, it kind of doesn't go anywhere, it's kind of the same thing
It kind of repeats itself, because it's about, like, Jackie fighting henchmen underwater, but there's also sharks there at the SeaWorld, or whatever the actual park is called. Pardon me for that, because I don't think they built that themselves. They actually used a real ocean park. And there's obviously sharks there. They need to avoid that. And they cut themselves at one point, so there's blood in the water. But the thing is, they do that over and over. Over and over. The bad guys get out of the water. We don't want to go in. You have to go in. Okay.
I think the international cut in that respect is a bit punchier. It's a bit quicker. And I think, you know, for me, this time around, I think this goes to show, really. The only, like, I didn't actually feel there was a whole scene added. You know what I mean? I don't think so. I think it's not detrimental, the US cut. I didn't, watching the Hong Kong cut for the first time, the only new scene I noticed was, as you said, it's the scene, the pervy scene that Stanley liked to film, and the one new scene with Jackie begging, the extra comedy. The rest of it felt like it was slow. I didn't feel like there was a whole entire, you know, extra chunks. It just felt like it was a lot slower. So I think what they've done with the US cut is that they've made it. It's kind of like you can't notice. You don't notice that it's quicker. It's. I think it's probably one of the best international cuts of a Hong Kong film ever, because I feel like it really does a service to the film and it doesn't do it detriment.
And the only downside, although thankfully it's a mixed language film, but the downside of the US cut is obviously all is dubbed in English. Cantonese and Mandarin scenes are dubbed in English, but presumably by Jackie. I have a feeling he did for them. I've seen it once on video, like when it came out on video, right? So I don't remember anything from it, really. So I would like to pick it up to see how it plays. And I have a feeling you're spot on that it's going to feel tighter and you're not going to miss the 2 seconds there, 10 seconds there, 15 there. So as much as we've bitched about, rightfully so, about the treatment of Hong Kong cinema abroad, the editing, I think, never, it rarely deserved, like, being critiqued. I think the editors were always spot on. It was the rest of the post-production, like adding new music and
sound effects being out of sync and stuff,
and adding urban soundtracks and crap like that. I think, though, I might be wrong, so listeners, correct me. This was, I think, New Line Cinema or Warner handled First Strike, and I don't think this had a rap soundtrack.
It didn't, no. It's the only thing, it changes the ending song. There's no, I can't remember what's playing under the ending song, because that was the first time I'd heard that cheeky...
Tom Jones, can you do Kung Fu Fighting again?
Well, yeah, it was the first time I heard that cheeky dance remix of the Police Story theme, which I'd never heard before, as I've never seen the international cut. So I was happy about that. But yeah, it's true, man. I think, you know, you're right with this one. It was just, it's the editing is normally spot on. It's just the other places they fuck up with the soundtrack and the Foley effects and not getting everything sung. Because there's some of the cuts, like the Miramax cuts, the sound effects don't even sync up with what's going on screen sometimes, which is terrible. It's just awful. Like, how can you fuck that up? But
And I wonder why they needed to replace the full score as well, because the score for First Strike is, it's not like, ding 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 ding. It's not a Chinese sounding score, man. It's a punchy, internationally flavored score, man.
It's definitely not racist.
Exactly. But I would like to see that. But I don't think it, the concept of the end fight in the water, fine. You know, something new. But I don't think it's executed with any, I didn't feel like it was fun, especially as it ran. It didn't feel fun. And also the peril here doesn't feel as genuine as the peril in the first half of the movie.
No, it's more comedic. It's played for laughs, really. And I think the US cut is better to quicker get to the final culmination of it with the tanks getting shot out and all that, you know, that kind of scene with Jackie trying to escape. I think they did the right move by kind of ditching some of the underwater action, getting quicker to the, you know, finale, I think, in that respect, for sure.
There's really no showstopper aspect to the ending, which is a shame. I mean, you can't always do a Police Story 3 ending, of course, which is just legendary in its showstopping aspect with the helicopter in Malaysia and all of that, or Singapore. But I felt that this was an aspect there where they had good intentions, of course, but it didn't feel punchy enough, and the final stunt with the car going into the boat and all of that. I mean, it's greatly executed, but I didn't think that was like a wow, final boom, now we're done. Bad guys are, you know, finished or caught. Yeah. No, not really, but it didn't sour my, like, or destroy any opinion of the movie, which I still think is very fun, but definitely looking to own the Hong Kong, the international cut finally on disc. Yeah, so.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with that, man.
A lot of fun ladder fight outtakes for you. Like the expected things. Like, why are you going to make it so difficult for you, Jackie? Well, it paid off, thankfully.
So. True. Yeah, it's very, very true.
Maybe not the most difficult scene he's ever had to deal with, but I just think it's so entertaining that ladder, that singular device, is going to create so much havoc when it all goes wrong, you know? So, yeah, it's all good. Any other notes, my friend?
What we got here, the hotel scene where Nathan Jones shows up the beast definitely gets the old ball bags tingling with the shots of the shots of the kind of the heights and the kind of shots of Jackie escaping around the hotel. It's like it always gives you chills up your spine if you're not a fan of heights like I am. It's dangerous.
I wouldn't do that for $1 million because it looks like it's high up and it's windy and that ledge is not big.
No, it's not. It's not the best factors for a bit of sightseeing around your hotel, for sure.
You said a name there. Is there a famous person that was cast for this movie to fight one of the giants?
He's an Australian. He was a boxer and a wrestler. And he shows up in Tom Yung Goong as well, Tony Jaa film, and he also shows up in Fearless as well, Jet Li's Fearless. So he shows up. Like, you know, often in these films, it really puts in a good performance when they need a massive guy for the hero to go up against. He always puts in a good performance.
He's been around the Hong Kong cinema block.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, he shows up. I do like that scene, and yeah, I think the casting, like we were saying, is great. Apart from that one guy, and he's the cop who runs into his superior and tells him what's going on. Like, you know, when it's all kicking off in Chinatown, and it's probably the most casual delivery of a crisis I've ever heard. Like, there's a problem at Underwater World? Shots fired? Explosions? Terrorists taking over? Jackie's there too? It's chaos. It's like he gets the realization that it's chaos too slow. It's like, it's chaos? Question mark?
Better get down there, I suppose.
He's great. It's like the rest of the cast, yeah, just great. Just, you know, good stuff all around, man.
Oh, right on. Well, as for availability then, the availability of the full uncut version using the mixed language sync sound track in English subtitles has always been problematic to own for those in need of subtitles. You know, as we said, not that the shortened US edit is bad or anything, but you'd want your options available to you, obviously. Maya did release a full uncut subtitled version for VCD and Laserdisc, but never on DVD. A Taiwanese DVD ticked all the boxes, except that it was all dubbed in Mandarin. So, goddammit. Japan has put out the movie several times on DVD uncut, but as expected, no English subtitles for that market. New Line's shortened US edit has been around forever on DVD, and you can surely get that at a reasonable price. But the recent development is that Warner Brothers, who has been involved in the rights, they have put out a good-looking Blu-ray on the US market, which is, as expected, the 85-minute US version with a full English track only, as opposed to the 107-minute Hong Kong version. But it's, by all accounts, a good-looking Blu-ray, and I'm sure it's going to stay at a good, reasonable price level for a while. I'm sure you can get it for, like, $10, $15 shipped or whatever. Like, Blu-rays are not that expensive for, like, basic editions, you know. It's presumably also region-coded, yes, but so hopefully, like, a Region B version for us in this part of the world will be available, but yes, I would recommend getting that, and I'm quite keen to own that version. It looks quite the best the movie has ever looked, I think, since its cinema run. Very colorful, very crisp looking, and all of that. While the Hong Kong Laserdisc is a bit muted, and obviously it's an old standard definition version of the film, but that's what I also own. It's quite nice to have.
Yeah, I agree. It's good to have the, you know, both cuts, you know, despite your opinions on which one's best. I think it's both to have great both cuts available, for sure.
Yeah, those Taiwanese DVDs, they did put both cuts on there, but they were from Taiwan, so it was all old Mandarin. They did Rumble in the Bronx as well. It was like, great, a widescreen subtitle, uncut version, it's all in Mandarin. Well, if I can't watch it any other way, then that's what I have to go with. So, also a sync sound movie, obviously, with English and Cantonese and things like that. So, and I like the edit of Rumble in the Bronx. It's just that the dubbing is a bit iffy at points.
I agree, yeah. It's lovable, though.
Yeah, it is. Certainly is. Right on. We are done for this episode, therefore. So let's put these two Stanley Tong movies to bed and in the archive. We've done a lot of Stanley Tong movies recently. As I said, there's an episode of China focusing on China Strike Force on the podcast on Fire Network as well. So are you a fan of that movie in general?
Yes. I am. Yes, I am.
I love Aaron Kwok, and I'm sure for some reason it just amuses me that he probably was happy to be driving, you know, a motorbike and a car, and probably sat there in the car going, rum, 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 I'm Aaron Kwok. Rum, rum, rum.
I get to look cool.
Because he obviously was 12 years old when he shot that movie. Aaron Kwok's like, rum, 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 in. But the thing is, when you do a Stanley Tong movie, you have to go out in traffic and do that shit.
If you do a Stanley Tong, you have to get your, you know, something broken at least. Or get the closest to death as possible doing a stunt that you can.
And he did. Like, you heard his either hand or arm, or maybe there was some ribbed crack in one of the stunts, motorcycle stunts. So yeah, welcome to Stanley Tong's cinema. So there it is.
Do you think Leslie Nielsen got hurt when he did Mr. Magoo?
I don't know. I don't know how stunt-heavy that movie is. If he falls down like holes and stuff like that and onto pavement, you know.
They actually threw him down some sewers.
I'm so blind. Whoops. And I'm not going to say anything about the movie because it flopped. I know that. But it might be fun.
I'm going to watch it and report back for sure.
I'm sure you can find it for a dollar.
Next episode of Podcast on Fire.
Report back, Mr. Magoo. There's nothing wrong with the cartoon. The cartoon was always fun, but I don't know how. There's not been a demand for another Mr. Magoo, so maybe that's the
not a lot. I haven't heard any,
no. Like, I'm so blind. Oh, hello, lady. And he's talking to a dog instead. Like, it's that kind of humor, you know. He's
classic setup.
Yeah, it's good fun. Good fun. But this has been, at any rate, Podcast on Fire on the Podcast on Fire Network. Pick any show you like. We have plenty of them over at podcastonfire.com, along with bonus episodes every now and again. Email us if you have any opinion on Mr. Magoo. For heaven's sake, give us shoot us an email. podcastonfire@googlemail.com, or let us know on the Facebook group. Use the buttons at the top of our website to reach Facebook and our Twitter and our iTunes feed and our Stitcher radio presence. I write about the variety of Hong Kong and Taiwanese movies over at sogoodreviews.com. My video reviewing hub is sleazykvideo.com, and my Twitter handle is at sogoodreviews. Go ahead and review Mr. Magoo for V Cinema. see what Dr. Barra thinks of that. Mr. Magoo? Yeah, man. Stanley Tong, man.
That's a threat.
We are done for this Stanley Tong special at any rate. And I've been Kenny B. And with me was Tom KW, formerly known as Tong KW. Now Mr. Magoo KW.
It's good. I always wanted a cool nickname, and that's probably the best, Ken. Thank you.
Tong KW.
Tong KW. Cheers for that. Never going to live that down now. It's not happening. I'm going to put the call down now and cry.
All right. We out. Thank you, everybody.